We Made This.
Hello and welcome to We Buy Records. I'm Paul Field and I'm joined as ever by the lovely Mr. Tim Scullion. Hello Tim, how are you?
Hi Paul, I'm alright, how are you?
Good, it's raining in Belgrade today.
Oh, it's blue skies, lovely sunny down here in Sussex.
It can't be hot here all the time.
Well, what temperature is it there? Do you know?
Today, 18 degrees.
What?
18.
You're joking?
No, why?
What? Well, it's about like 7 degrees here or something. It's not 18 degrees.
Spring is here. It was sunny. It'll start getting warm soon.
It'll start getting warm.
Mate, wait till it gets to 40.
Well, yeah, and that's not so fun. In England, 18 degrees is warm, you bastard.
Right, listeners haven't tuned in for the weather, Tim.
No, it's true.
Right, let's do a little bit of housekeeping. Big shout out to the lovely Paul A. Taylor for his coffee contribution. Now, we are back regularly. If you do want to buy us a coffee, you can go to ko-fi.com/WeBuyRecords. Chuck us a few quid, which we will definitely not spend on coffee.
But you don't have to, but it's appreciated. But you don't have to.
No, of course not.
Yes, and just a quick bit of housekeeping from me. I have made good on my threat, and there is now a Facebook We Buy Records page, group, whatever it is. If you're a Facebook user, then just go onto it and search We Buy Records podcast and you'll find it, and I'm there and all your pals are there and it's very fun.
Right, should we do the news?
Yes.
So Tim, this was all over the BBC. It was on the television news as well. Catherine saw it.
No, well, about 12 people yesterday in the shop broke this news. Ooh. To me as well.
The number of independent record shops in the UK hits a 10-year high. This is great news. So there are now, do you know how many shops there are now?
Is it about 300 or something?
It was 461.
Right.
122 up on 10 years ago. And I think you've been... Haven't you been trading for 10 years?
Yes, so it's you're saying it's because of us?
You were the trailblazer.
We were the trailblazer.
Interestingly, though, the places that... the number of outlets that have dropped selling physical media, supermarkets, 8,000 less now stock physical media.
Oh.
Which is unusual, because normally they will follow the curve the other way.
Yeah, so it's a net loss. A huge net loss.
Yeah, the number of shops physically selling music, such as supermarkets and specialist chains, fell by 8,000 compared to 2014. So when you go in, you want to get your tin of beans, loaf of bread, Adele's 30. Now you can't. Now you have to come and see HMV or an indie. I mean, it's good for the indies, but it is a bit weird.
Yes. And I suppose a 10-year high is still a 40 year low, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, you have to drill down into these stats. It's they've made it sound much more sexy than it the reality is. I mean, physical sales now make up 8% of the music market.
Okay.
Whereas 92% is on streaming.
That's a lot, isn't it? That's a lot of percent on streaming.
Well, I'm assuming, because if 8% is in physical form, where's the other 92? It must be streaming.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. It's a transformed marketplace, isn't it?
But here's the kicker with this, and this is what, if you read through this, records are doing great, shops are doing great, everything's rosy, everything's fantastic. They spoke to a very nice chap who has a record shop in Frome in Somerset. And he's saying, oh, yeah, you know, vinyls are pretty consistent. They've gone up for us a bit over the last few years. But in the week, for us, CDs are our predominant selling product.
Oh, shit. The funny thing is, though, Paul, so, I mean, that is funny. I know of at least one new record shop within the vicinity of us that doesn't even stock CDs. They only stock records.
We stock a few, literally one long row, but we don't sell very many.
We actually sell quite a lot, but they're so cheap that compared to records,
yeah,
they don't, you know, it's nice to have them. Some people buy them, but evidently some new music shops do make serious money out of CDs, and that's great. There's no judgment, but it is funny that there can be one new music retailer that doesn't even stock CDs, and then a few hours away there can be another one who makes most of their money on CDs. That in itself is actually very weird.
Well, I mean, I see the wholesale list. The CDs ain't that cheap either. They're not that cheap. They are cheaper, but they're not that cheap.
Anyway, well done, record shops.
Yes, congratulations, record shops.
If you're a record shop that's opened in the last 10 years, well done. Please keep trading. We love you.
Now, Tim, you know what's coming up next month, don't you?
No, Paul, what?
Your favourite time of year.
Is it Christmas?
It's Record Store Day. Now, as always, this is going to be massively divisive amongst our listeners. Some love it, some are ambivalent, but many, many really don't like it.
Yes, yes. Our mailbag has been... I think each year when we do this, I think that the mailbag gets more negative.
It is slewing that way. And having looked through the list, with some reason, I suspect, should we give our little thoughts on the list and what's available this year?
Yes.
Okay. Should we start with... Let's start with... I've picked out three things which seem a little bit ridiculous to me.
Okay.
States of Independence, Donna Summer. Now, this must come into the store quite a lot.
So the 12-inch...
I think it's a slight variation of the 12-inch. There's some mixes and stuff, but effectively, yes, but it's blue.
I think it's...
It's got the same artwork and stuff.
We sell it for two... I think maybe it's two quid, I think.
Yes, well, I've got it down listed here. It's £2.
Yeah.
Or you can buy this lovely reissue for £26.
Oh, I see. I saw this. They're calling it an album.
Yes.
But really, it's just a remix 12-inch, yes, isn't it? I think it's got maybe five or six mixes on it.
It's the same record in a funny hat.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously not worth... How much was it?
26 quid.
Yeah, it's not worth 26 quid. I mean, it's a banger. It's a gay anthem. You know, it's a big tune. But £2 would have been preferable. Yeah.
Oh, do you know what? I forgot to look up how much this is. But it's irrelevant because my next annoyance is Dr. Alban's It's My Life.
Oh, classic.
Which is bizarrely on 10-inch.
Oh.
I mean, it's a tune, but you can pick up the 7-inch for a pound.
Paul, as I've said, how many times have I said to you on this pod, Everyone loves a 10-inch? Oh, dear. So you're not going to be buying the Dr. Alban 10-inch?
No, because you can just go and get the 7-inch for a quid.
I know, Paul. It's all right. Have you got one more bad for us?
Yeah, Michael Gray, The Weeknd. Now, this was a big club anthem, and I can see why some... Because it's not... crazy cheap. It's going to cost you 15-16 quid for a nice 12-inch copy. However,
so what's your problem?
This is a 7-inch.
Oh god, is it really?
Who's that aimed at? The one person who wants The Weeknd by Michael Gray in their jukebox, because I can't see anyone else wanting to buy it.
Oh, that's really weird.
And it's 17 quid. What a complete waste of time, money, energy, resources and everything else. It's so ridiculous.
Now, would that have even come out as a 7-inch?
No, that's what I'm saying. Unless you have a jukebox, why would... It's a club record. It needs to be on a 12-inch single. There's a reason there's no 7-inch.
Yeah, that's very weird.
How desperate were they to think, what can we release? What can we release?
Well, Paul, I'm so glad you've asked that. because if we...
Has anything annoyed you, Tim?
Yes. So mine, it's sort of one, but it's a big one.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to take a little bit of unpicking. So Paul, are you ready? Can you pay me some strict attention, please, and let's see if I can explain to you why I'm annoyed and what I think is going on.
Okay.
So $29.99, David Bowie, Waiting in the Sky, open brackets, Before the Starman, close brackets. Now, Paul, did you see this?
I did not. I saw it on the list, but I didn't stop and see what it entails. Go on, what actually is it then?
So, on the face of it, it looks like it's a sort of intriguing alternative early version of the album Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars, right? That's what the blurb suggests it is. But what it really is... Well, in my opinion, and please don't sue me, Parlophone or whatever, is it seems like a really clever con so that they've got a Bowie thing to release for Record Store Day. And I'm very happy to be wrong. This is just how it appears to me. So, Paul, this is what they've done. Imagine a band goes into the studio to record an album. They will often have 2, 3, 4 recording sessions for that album, right? It's not that common, unless you're a little indie punk band, to go in, record the whole album in one session, in one day, and go, bosh, job done, whole album. You'll probably go back. There's nothing unusual about it being over a few sessions, right? All that's been done here, as far as I can see, is that arbitrarily, they have released the first session in its entirety. So that session was most of the album and 4 tracks that ended up being released later as B-sides because they weren't good enough for the album.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there is a single second of previously unreleased music on here. You could do this with any album that had more than one recording session. Oh, here's a special version that's just the first session, including a couple of tracks that ended up as B-sides because you record more than you put on the album, because that's what happens.
This sounds like the sweepings off the floor.
It's not even that, because it is the album that got released. It is Ziggy Stardust, minus 3 songs that were in a second recording session, plus 4 songs that ended up originally as B-sides.
Are you going to buy it?
No, fuck no. The thing is, I don't even think I'm getting across to you what's happening, but I'm scared because I think this is opening the door to a fucking con.
Ah.
So it could be, right, Depeche Mode. They recorded Violator in 2 sessions. Most of it was in the first session. A few tracks were done in the second session. We're going to do a special issue with a different cover that's just the first session of these tracks as they ended up on the album, because that was the same recording. That's the recording that was the album recording. But it's missing the songs from the second session and including a song that ended up as a B-side, which they happened to record in the first session. That is just stupid.
Okay, now I'm fully up to speed. That is ridiculous.
It's nothing. It's not a thing. It shouldn't be a thing.
Well, Tim, it's not the only con that's going to be coming up in this episode, that's for sure.
So, listeners, do you understand what I'm trying to say? Because I think it's simple, but it's also kind of really tricksy. And am I right or wrong for thinking that this is a complete con?
Our listeners will have plenty to say about David Bowie.
Yeah, please, listeners, do you want to buy this? Did you want to buy this and now you don't? Do you want to buy it anyway? And am I being unreasonable for thinking that it is a con? Paul, have you got any positives? Have you got any after that rant?
Well, a very, very welcome reissue of Orbital. Because if you want a nice copy of that at the moment, it's going to cost you a couple of hundred quid.
Fantastic.
That's what it should be for. That is a perfect example of reissuing something for Record Store Day that's horribly expensive that quite a lot of people would like to own.
Exactly.
Sophie Ellis-Bextor, the lovely Sophie Ellis-Bextor, she's put out some of the remixes from some of her dancier hits, which were on promos and stuff like that. Again, great way for fans to be able to get hold of some of that slightly more elusive material. And then this one I was excited about, but now I hate it because I saw the price.
I've got one of them in a minute.
So Strictly Rhythm, Josh Winks, Higher State of Consciousness, absolute banger. Unfortunately, they want 30 quid for a 12-inch. Fuck off. Actually, if any listener is, you know, rich and going to be first in the queue, drop me a message if you could pick me up Orbital and Sophie Ellis Bextor.
So I've got, same as you, I've got one in a minute, which was a positive, and then I saw the price.
Ah.
But my clear winner for Record Store Day would be $29.99 on, these are all the rough trade prices, by the way, listeners.
Oh, yeah.
Pulp Intro, The Gift Recordings. Now, this has never been reissued. It's a 1993 compilation of, I think, 3 12-inches that they recorded for Gift, which is a subsidiary of Island. And it was the, it was basically just as they, or just before they were starting to get proper success. And it is, it, it works as a fantastic album. It really, really is great. The original is worth 70 quid and up in nice condition. So for it to be reissued for 30 quid for a really good pulp record that has been otherwise unavailable, fantastic. $27.99, 101 Strings, Astro Sounds from Beyond the Year 2000. This is a legendary 1968 Exotica album. That, you know, previous pressings of it are quite expensive, and it's just a really good cult, kind of weird, ambient, groovy, great thing. One caveat with that is, this has already had a Record Store Day reissue in 2017. Should that be allowed?
I think they've done this before. I think I saw another item on this list that has already been done before. Can't remember which really? One it was. Yeah.
That's not right, is it?
Oh, and I saw a new album as well that had just come out, also on the list, but on black vinyl, because I think all the others were on fancy colours.
No, that's amazing. The Record Store Day one is black vinyl.
Yep.
That's more like it. More of that, please.
Oh, talking of black vinyl, make sure you listen out later in the show for Gareth's segment where they've started to rename black vinyl.
Oh, shit. Okay. Oh, yeah. I'm looking forward to that. And then, Paul, like your Josh Wink higher state of consciousness, I've got, it was a good and now it's a bad. The Roaches self-titled debut album. I think it was a debut album on red vinyl. The album is an all-time classic, brilliant bit of kind of arty, feminist, quirky folk rock with some nice Robert Fripp guitar on it. I mean, it's not your cup of tea, Paul, probably, but it's fantastic. Now, we get original pressings of this, like European pressings, in the shop quite often, and we sell them for between £8 and £15. The Record Store Day reissue is of a single disc record is $46.99.
Get to fuck.
Why are they gatekeeping it at that price? What? Who does it benefit to make it be the best part of 50 quid? Paul, have our listeners been in touch? I think they have with their picks or their picks or their anger.
They have indeed. Jezebel says, for me, the big ones are Kristin Hirsch, Hips and Makers Repress, Billy Martin and Prefab Sprouts EPs. But what you can't understand is, how do you pronounce it? Is it Zoetrope or Zoetrope?
I think it's Zoetrope.
Zoetrope. George Harrison's got one. Blur's got one. Oh, and you've put a thing here. Tim, you've even read the show notes, because Lily Allen, Steps and Doctor Who.
And T-Rex. Everyone's getting in.
I kept seeing this word. I don't even know what it is. Is it something like a little pattern that spins or something? Is that what it is?
Yes. Yeah, so it is a series of images. It's basically like a film strip. And it's a film strip. So if you've ever been to a sort of museum or kids thing where you look through little slits and a thing spins and you see an animated man on a horse or a clown.
Ah, yeah, I know what you mean now.
So it's like that.
Yeah.
I think that the stupid thing about this is, and basically, Paul, this is for the internet. This is for TikTok and YouTubers to make videos of, because a zoetrope doesn't really work if you look at it with your eyes, but if you film it at the right frame rate, it looks like it's animating. So this is of no value to a human. It's only of value to the internet.
I've got one of these. It was on Novamute, put one out a few years back, and yeah, you're right, it came with a little slip, and it told me to put my phone and record it.
Yep.
There we go.
So it's, yep, vinyl gimmick for the TikTok generation, I'm afraid is what that is.
What else have the listeners had to say, Tim?
Well, this is a good point. Realization Music says their issue is queuing or waiting for that exclusive Record Store Day release to then see restocks available for weeks and weeks after. And they wonder, is this a new thing? Yeah, I think it is. I mean, it certainly wasn't the case in the early days of Record Store Day, was it?
No.
You wouldn't get a message from your local shop. Oh, hey, guys, right, we've got some more stock in now. Yeah, and it's because that the stuff isn't shifting now from the distributors. They're not selling out of this rubbish Who recent, you know, whatever it is, 12-inch. And so for the weeks and months later, they're pushing on record shops. This is a little bit of secret. Don't tell the distributors that I'm giving this behind the scenes information, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
This is secret. But so then they keep pushing the stock to say, hey, now we've got more available, get it while it lasts. And what it means is it didn't sell out because it wasn't sought after enough. In my opinion, don't hate me, distributors. I'm just speaking truth to power.
I'm not sure if this next response is a positive or a negative. And so McCandra, I'm not doing that surname, it's too many vowels. Not having a record store anywhere near me. Is that good? Is that good or bad?
I think it's a positive.
You think that's a positive?
Yeah, I do.
Fair enough.
Chris S. has got great taste. He says, excited for Pulp intro. He says, I'll finally get Sheffield Sex City on vinyl. And also excited for the 101 Strings sounds from beyond the year 2000. So well done, Chris. Excellent taste. What boils Chris's piss is £33 for that Global Communications 12-inch. Sheer greed. I mean, is it just greed when there is a 12-inch or a 7-inch for 20, 30, 40 quid?
Yes.
Is there nothing else going on? It can't just be greed.
I get local DJs who have small number, say, you know, of their releases pressed, and they come into the store and I buy them wholesale for about €7 or €8.
Yeah, I know.
And this is a small local artist who can do this. So if you're a major label, how have you got, and bear in mind, so they're probably getting them for what, €4?
I mean, obviously.
So where have they got €35 retail from?
Rights, I suppose. So you've got to wonder how much the artist has demanded.
Maybe.
So that's all I can think of is that the artist said, yes, you can press up 2,000 copies, but you have to pay me $50,000. That's all I can think of. But then you'd think that the record label would go, no, you're all right then.
Yeah. Rob Patterson writes, I don't know about loosening underwear, but the prices are making me nauseous. This isn't what Record Store Day was conceived as. It's now corporate exploitation. Very, very to the point there.
We should point out this that loosening underwear. He's not a pervert. This is responding to how you phrased the question on Twitter. Otherwise, I feel like we're dropping him in it that suddenly he's mentioning loosening underwear. Don't blame him, blame Paul.
I asked if any of the releases were getting people excited enough to loosen their underwear elastic.
Yes, you did. Stuart Proud says, the Sonny Rollins album for Record Store Day is £102.99.
Well, he can get in the bin. And Tim, there's something on here. Thank you, by the way, everyone. We couldn't read them all out. There were too many. Thank you for your email messages, whatever. We always appreciate when you get in touch and we do read them all. Tim, there's a piece of very important information that you've missed. Related to Record Store Day. It's in the show notes. You added it. I can see that it was done by you. And I was waiting for the listeners desperately need to know this. It's crazy important.
Hang on. I'm just looking at our notes. Hang on.
Oh.
Paul, you're right. We missed the most important bit of Record Store Day news. I'm so sorry. Thank you for pointing it out to me. Record Store Day 2024 has an official wine partner.
Hooray!
And I think no more needs to be said about that.
Oh, God.
There you go. Record Store Day. Have fun, everybody.
Shall we hear from lovely Gareth from Clash magazine now?
Oh, yes, let's please.
There's some great stuff been released recently. Catherine Priddy is an up-and-coming British folk artist, and truly, she is the real deal. She did a wonderful job with her 2021 debut, which kind of gradually built some momentum. She's excellent at kind of putting clips of her process up on social media and has sort of slowly built a loyal following. But she signed a cooking vinyl for her new album, The Pendulum Swing, and it's a really great record. I always love it when you hear folk artists advance through their career and you can see them making those steps really quickly. This new record has some really gorgeous songs that are all about the idea of kind of leaving home, trying to figure out where your place in the world is, somehow returning back to home and wondering if you failed, and then trying to make sense of it all. There's a beautiful song called First House on the Left that does that really kind of lovely textures that you'd want from a kind of complex folk piece. Opening track, you've got A Boat on the River as well, Early Doors on the album as well, meticulous sort of layers to that. And it's the sort of song that over a couple of listens becomes a real earworm. The vinyl cut is excellent. They've done a grand job of it. When you've got those lovely little folk textures going on, if you've got too compressed a mid-range, actually you lose a lot of the beauty of the performance. So you need that space. They've done a grand job of that. It's a gorgeous gatefold package as well. They pressed it at Tact, so you may find the odd ones a little noisy. I have to say the green vinyl that I sampled sounded really lovely, and that album is well worth giving a listen. So it's The Pendulum Swing by Catherine Priddy. There's been plenty of hype around The Last Dinner Party in the build-up to their debut album, Prelude to Ecstasy. They got the Radio 1 Sound of 2024 title, which is something that we obviously observe very religiously in this house, but they are now out there with a new album. They've got a very sort of calculated image, and it's, you know, it's kind of gothic looks to everything, and some people have taken against them for it being quite so well controlled and such a sort of very well stage managed PR campaign. I don't really have a problem with that. It's the music industry. What do you expect? You've got to try and make things sell in this day and age. Their songs are great. I mean, their choruses are superb. People know things like Nothing Matters and The Feminine Urge and Sinner. Just really, really great songs. Arrangements are just glorious. Their ability to shift direction in the middle of a song, fantastic. When I wrote about it, I sort of described it as having a curious sweet spot between The Divine Comedy, The Cure and Florence and the Machine, which are not three acts I'd naturally put next to each other, but there is something intriguing going on there. As I said, they're very much distinctive in their brand, and I doubt this is the first time anyone's really hearing of them. That said, their new vinyl release is on various different sort of variants with different names such as Oxblood Red, Red Wine Stain. There's a picture disc, and I sampled the Smoky Marble. Smoky Marble did not fill me full of confidence because, as we know, once you start murking up the vinyl process, it doesn't tend to end well. And although it was pressed to optimal, I've got to be honest, wasn't the quietest. There were a few bits of sort of rustling crackle and then a couple of particularly egregious pops which did not play well. The mastering's all right. It could do with some top end. It's a classic example of something that's been mastered for loud streaming, which has then had a sort of slight adaptation for the vinyl pressing. It needs more breath and more space in the high end, but it sounds all right. And musically, you know, like I said, some great songs. Granddaddy are back. And people were overjoyed when they returned previously in 2017. With their reunion record Last Place, which was their first in many a year. Tragically, though, soon after that release, their bassist and co-founder Kevin Garcia died, and naturally that put pay to the momentum of that return. And so lots of people were thrilled at their return. And everyone knows their kind of drowsy, melancholic majesty and the kind of pillowy melodies and all the sort of beautiful things that they do with their songs. And it was lovely to have them back. And then they went quiet again for obvious reasons. This time around, it should be said, it is the name Granddaddy, but it is basically just Jason Little doing his thing on his own. There's some great mastering from Ruri O'Flaherty on this. The album is called Blue Wav or Blue Wave. I mean, Wav is in the audiophile spelling, W-A-V. But it is an intriguing record. It's got the creaking, melancholic sounds that you'd want. There's lots of charm. It's quite fulsome, actually, and sort of built up rather nicely. All the sorts of things you'd expect in terms of beautiful songs. Long As I'm Not the One is one that I would suggest sort of tuning into if you'd like to get a sense of that. Lyrics, I'm all alone now and no, I don't like it. I'm on my own now and I won't deny it, I think perhaps is typical of a granddaddy lyric. So you know what you're getting, and it's nicely done. On the weird name for vinyl variants theme of earlier, this is available on Wave Blue, Hot Mars Red, Cul-de-Sac Black, and Nebula variants.
Sorry, Cul-de-Sac Black.
Yeah, or as most people know it, Black. Taylor Swift's up to this as well with one of her latest variants, which by the time you hear this, you won't be able to buy anymore, because only if you're a proper fan do you buy it when it's briefly available. And she's called hers Ink Black as well, because, you know, black is now a variant. This one's pressed at GZ, so this Granddaddy record, it sounds good. The mastering is nicely done. tiny bit of surface noise here and there, but with a good clean, it came up fine. I would imagine some of the more fancy variants might be a little bit more lively. And finally, let's doff our hats collectively to Sub Pop Records for understanding that buying vinyl is a bit of a financial minefield right now. They have released the latest Jay Maskus album, He of Dinosaur Jr., entitled What Do We Do Now? Presto Optimal, and it's just over £20. Rather than 30, 35,
hooray!
It's got lovely artwork, it's a lovely pressing, really quiet, you can crank it up and it sounds tremendous, and it's just over 20. Some places will be about £20, but most are around 20. I mean, let's be honest, if it can be done, then why aren't others doing it? A really great thing. Mastered by Greg Kelby at Sterling Sound, as per usual. Slightly heavier on the bottom end, as tends to be the case with Jay Maskus's work. Often feels a bit like early Wilco. It's a fully fleshed out band sound, slightly more so than he normally does. And obviously it sounds like Jay Maskus singing, so in that sense it doesn't sound like Wilco because of Jeff Tweedy's voice. But musically, there's definitely that sound of early Wilco in there. And like I said, the mix is a little bit towards the bottom end, but it's still got plenty of detail in the mid-range. It's a really quite optimal pressing and quite, you know, as I said earlier, quite importantly, not ridiculously priced.
Well, Gareth, who thinks they're getting our money, but in fact have ended up red-faced and shamed on the naughty step?
This one's a frustrating one for me because one of the first times I really waded into the whole vinyl discussion many years ago, in terms of actually putting my head above the parapet and trying to talk about pressings, was Suede's reunion album, Bloodsports, back in 2013. And at the time, the mastering was mad. They'd cranked it so far, there was actual crackling distortion on several of the quieter songs because of the way they'd squashed everything and brick-walled it, to the extent that fans wrote to the band and said, can you please remaster this? It's faulty. They defended it at the time, the management was saying, no, this is intentional, this is in the mix, we want it to sound like that. And at the time, there was an MPO vinyl pressing, which didn't have as much of that problem, because obviously they had to tame it slightly for the vinyl cut, as is the nature of these things, which was quite forward, a bit tinny, because it's, you know, Suede, but it sounded all right. You know, you could still enjoy the music, certainly more so than the digital version. Then it was announced that it was going to be done via Demon's Half-Speed series that they've been doing quite a lot of recently, and actually those have been generally well done. You've got Barry Grint tends to be the person involved in sorting out those cuts, and I thought, well, this is interesting. Presumably they're going to have to go back and remaster it properly, otherwise it's not going to work for this process. It was then also announced it was going to be a dinked edition, so one of these independent shop special editions as well. So you've got a red dinked edition, you've got the black standard edition, which is half speed. They both use the same half speed cut, even though that's not made immediately clear. I've listened to both, just to be really certain about this. They are the same cut. Dinked is red. You'll need some GZ Roulette, because one was quite quiet, one wasn't, so good luck with all of that. Musically, it's a great record, I think. You know, if you want the kind of thrills of coming up, then you've got tracks like Hit Me, Starts and Ends With You, Barriers, What Are You Not Telling Me, For the Strangers. They're all great, you know, listening to them again, a really fabulous record. The mastering's confusing. I mean, I think what they've tried to do is turn it down a bit because it was mixed too hot in the first place, so it doesn't crunch at the top. So when you get to those tracks that previously crackled, they don't really crackle anymore. But something weird is going on in the mid-range. So there are several tracks where you're actually hearing the vocals and drums competing for space in the soundstage, which is just odd. You know, it's almost like they're kind of riding the fader so that as Brett's voice comes through, then the drum beat comes and he recesses and then goes back and forth. It's just a bit flat sounding. It's a shame. You know, I think they've done it with the best of intentions, but whatever goes on with that source material, I think it's potentially unsalvageable. So it's all right. You know, if you want it on vinyl, it's not horrific, but at the same time, it really hasn't kind of addressed the issue with that original mix. If you go with the dinked edition, which is almost certainly long sold out, but you might find a few in the shelves of indie shops, you get a bonus 7-inch with a couple of B-sides from the time. Looking at the 7, it doesn't appear to have been half-speed cut like the main album. But given we're asking around £30 for this, and the mastering hasn't really been dealt with compared to the issue before, I'd give it a miss.
Let's head to the reissue coalface. What have we got, Gareth? Something great?
Kevin Ayres, his solo debut Joy of a Toy after leaving Soft Machine in 1969, has been very hard to track down a really nice original copy of, and in the reissue market it hasn't always been that well served. The people at Four Men with Beards, which a name of a label that will send a shudder through the spine of many, they tried it a few times, and anyone that's ever listened to a Four Men with Beards records will know why you should never buy a Four Men with Beards pressing. They had a go. There have been a few others down the line. The only time it's been done well in recent memory is Music on Vinyl in 2015. You know, they tend to do a good job. They'd gone back to the original source, they'd done the gatefold quite nicely. It's a good sounding pressing. It's quite a forward mastering. What we've now got is a Cherry Red reissue for 2024. They've gone back an original master tape remastered. So they've gone back to the original source. They've pressed it at Palace. and they've kept it in at 25 quid in a gatefold. I'd say that's not bad if you want something that's been done really, really well. And personally, I think this edges the music on vinyl. It doesn't blow it away. These things generally don't. It's a bit better. It's got a softer presentation. I think if you've got warmer speakers, it will suit your system. If you've got quite bright, loud ones, then you might prefer the music on vinyl one, to be honest. But you've got a warmer system and you can crank this up. I think it sounds really lovely. It doesn't have quite so much artificial oomph to it. I think it just rises out of the mids rather beautifully. And there's a track, Girl on a Swing, which can sound quite heavy in its original mix. So that's a good test of how well cut a record's been. And I think on this one, it just edges that music on vinyl pressing. So if you are in the market for one, this is an absolute no-brainer. And if you've got the other one, you might want to upgrade. But, you know, I do think that 2015 was done well. The audiophile jazz market has been doing big business of late. And of course, from time to time, we mention a few on here. Decca Records have sort of slid into this a little bit with a reissue of Miles Davis's Ascenseur pour l'échafaud.
Ooh, reasonable. Very good.
From 1958. And they've done it with a shiny tip-on gatefold. And they made a big thing about the fact they were doing replica packaging. There's a brand new sleeve note, all this kind of stuff. But then as part of the listing, it actually said during the listing, you know, original replica sleeve, blah, blah, pressed at GZ in the Czech Republic. And a few people got in touch with me and said, is this something we put on press releases now? And it's something we talked about previously about, is this something, you know, companies are bragging about now? So a few people did ask, would you have a listen and see? So I did ask for a copy. And, you know, the sleeve is lovely. So I will say, if you want a nice shiny, if you want a nice shiny sleeve, it's great. Inside is a plain paper sleeve, one of the very rough cheapo ones that mean you've then got little bits on the disc when you finally manage to extricate it from its static-filled hellhole. The disc then gets cleaned and it's reasonably quiet. I mean, there's still a bit of noise in there. Once it comes out with those bits, you know it's basically spent the whole journey having those bits of paper and glue rubbed against it as it's moved around in transit. So it's imperfect. The Sonics are all right. They didn't blow me away. It's quite hard to figure out exactly what's going on with the sources and everything. I mean, it sounds okay, but it really isn't an audiophile pressing in the way that it's made to look. You know, clearly the aesthetics are to look like a tone poet. But sonically, it's nothing special. And frankly, if you want some beautiful sounding jazz this month, get Art Pepper Quintet Smack Up from Contemporary Records, pressed at RTI as part of the big organisation there, or get Blue Mitchell's Sublime Down With It, the Tone Poet reissue. You know, some great, great stuff that's out there. I would leave the Miles Davis well alone. A GZ pressing that I am very happy with is the latest Spiritualized reissue. So they were doing the Spacemen reissue program for the first part of their career a few years back, which prompted a lot of mixed responses, shall we say, in the sense that they kept doing the sleeve slightly too small, or they're doing glow-in-the-dark vinyl, which was naturally quite noisy, or there was a repeating click on lots of copies of Ladies and Gentlemen, and they just seem to have an awful lot of bad luck. And of course, you do make your own luck, and if you choose to press in certain places, you are inviting problems. The latest stage, they're kind of going to the latter part of the career now, and they begin with Amazing Grace, which came out in the early noughties and originally was done as a sort of 3x12-inch collectible box. So over 3 weeks you could buy the album as a single, and then it went in a box, and then they did the record properly and all this kind of novelty stuff that happened back then. This, it just sounds better. Fans of Spiritualized will know that they do, you know, veer towards the shrill at times in their production. That is Jason Pierce's thing. But this, the nuance in it, Matt Colton has done the cut, and it's a name I've mentioned in the past, Matt Colton's vinyl cuts. I think he's fantastic. He's done a superb job of this. There's an updated gatefold sleeve by Mark Farrow as well. But honestly, the shrill aspects are tamed. The mid-range is really open. She Kissed Me, It Felt Like a Hit has never sounded better. Lord Let It Rain on Me opens up beautifully. It's pretty reasonably priced as well. We sampled the standard black edition for the column, and it just sounds really, really good. Honestly, it actually made me think differently about that album, because hearing it with just a bit more composure really did work. And finally, when a Mr. Bongo reissue arrives in a tip-on style sleeve, you know you're onto something special, because they've not just reissued it, they want it to feel like a luxury item. Despite that fact, it's another one that's only just over 20 quid. It is the album Simba by O'Donnell Levy. And this was released back in 1973. This kind of jazz guitarist had been working with George Benson and Jimmy McGriff at the time and was signed to Groove Merchant Records. And Mr. Bongo are going to do a series of reissues from that label, and this is the first one. This was only recorded over the course of a couple of days. It's a collaboration between him and Manny Albarn, who was arranging the material as well. Essentially, what you get is this kind of bombastic, kind of funky, soulful jazz. Sounds a bit like a kind of car chase soundtrack and all those kind of cliches. But it is really, really good. Cecil Bridgewater's on there, although I think I'm probably supposed to say Cecil, aren't I? Was on there doing all sorts of great stuff as well. Honestly, it is bombastic in all the right ways, and it is rhythmic in all the best ways, and it's just over £20. It's a silent optimal pressing. It's got a great cover. If you need any convincing, just search it up and give a track a listen, like Bad Bad Simba, and I'm pretty certain you'll be sold.
Well, Gareth, I've just returned from South America, where I've sold a kidney to cover my winter fuel bills. I've got £30 left in my pocket. What's Pick of the Pops?
Well, technically it's two things, so you'll have to choose one of them, but it's two reissues of Robert Forster, unless you want to get rid of the other kidney. Robert Forster, he of the Go-Betweens. Needle Mythology, we've mentioned a few times before, the reissue label that was spearheaded by Pete Perfidis. They did a couple of Robert Forster albums previously, but then their 90s stuff from his catalogue has been long out of print and much in demand. And over the last couple of years, they've been chipping away at getting those sorted. In between that, of course, they also released some breakfast cereal, according to Robert Forster. Unique recipe. But we're now at the two albums, the first of which is 1994's Beautiful Hearts, which was actually originally called I Had a New York Girlfriend, but has been renamed for this purpose. In addition to that, also sorted out some of the sort of presentation of it in the sleeve, but it's the music that matters. It was a covers record, and to be fair to Forster, he admits it in the sleeve notes that this is what you do when you can't think of any songs to write. We've seen many artists do this. It's the kind of the cleansing process for writer's block. So you've got some fabulous versions of things like Mickey Newbury's Frisco Depot, Spirits Nature's Way, Echo Beach by Martha and the Muffins. They are fantastically done in that kind of lived-in, creaky, indie country fashion that makes Forster such a particular talent. It did a good job as well, because the second album that we're going to mention in a moment was caused by that unblocking of the creative juices. Both of these have been remastered by Sean McGee at Abbey Road, so it's all been done to the highest standard here. They do sound stunning, and as Needle Mythology fully understands the importance of it, they press at the Vinyl Factory. So you get a beautiful pressing, gorgeously remastered artwork so that it looks crisp and clear. You get a bonus 7-inch in each one as well. So for this first one, you get two further cover versions. The second album that's been reissued is Warm Nights, which then followed in 1996, and that was the kind of unblocking of it all. These are all originals, produced by Edwin Collins, no less, as well. And it's a kind of groovesome set, in the sense that it's got a lot of rhythm to it. It's still got that kind of languid vocal, but a great kind of evening listen, this one. Jug of Wine is a tremendous track to give you a bit of a sense of the atmosphere that he goes for. There's also a few tweaks done in the kind of restoring process as well. So the three-piece brass section that's used on a few tracks wasn't originally on the track Fortress, which is now back on it for this new edition. One track's been removed to put back on the song that he wishes he hadn't taken off in the first place. The sleeve note's great, because you get the proper story behind all of this. So if you like Robert Forster or the Go-Betweens, the majesty of this is that you get the best sound you could possibly hope for. You get a sleeve note from an artist telling you the artistic process and what it meant to them, with humour and honesty and humility. You get a great pressing, fantastic mastering. You know, if you want reissues done properly, this is how to do them. And once again, Needle Mythology demonstrate their capacity to show pretty much everyone else how to do it.
Thank you so much, Gareth. Useful stuff. That's what we like. Thank you very, very much. Listeners, you can enjoy more from Gareth if you find Clash magazine on the internets. Thank you, Gareth. We love you.
Oh, we get to sing, Tim. We get to sing.
Here we go.
Tim's Anecdote Corner. So excited.
It's been a little while, hasn't it? Paul, a bloke came into the shop last week.
Of course he did.
He had sold us about 200 tapes, sort of jazz fusion and sort of world and Latin-y bits, about 3 years ago. And he rocked up last week and said, "Oh, hello, do you remember I sold you some tapes a little while ago?" He didn't say how long ago, he just said a little while ago. And there were some that you said weren't really for you, weren't really sellable, and you would donate them to a charity shop. And we said, "Yeah." And he said, "Well, I've just got a new secondhand car, and it's got a tape deck in it. So could I have them back, please?" And we said, "Well, unfortunately, about 3 years ago, when we said we'd donate them to a charity shop, we donated them to a charity shop." So we said, "Oh, which one was it?" So that was quite funny. That's it. That is the end of
Tim's Anecdote Corner. Tim, I know the last episode you got very excited by the 5 quid classics. Very excited.
It's something I'm really, really into. I love our 5 quid classics section shop. Obviously, some of these things are more like 2 quid classics. But the point is, for a fiver or less, you can still get fantastic records in your local secondhand record shop. And I do want to make this an occasional repeated feature where we can dip in and throw out a few more. And listeners, you're super welcome. In fact, you're encouraged to get in touch with us still with any more 5 quid classics.
And they have, Tim. The listeners are back in touch with more.
And they are back in touch. Paul Williamson says, Fine Young Cannibals, self-titled. He says, if you remove the stupid cover version and put the one good song off the other album onto this one, it would be perfect.
We have that in our 500 dinar section, so that's £3.50.
Yeah, there you go, perfect. He also says, Boz Scaggs' first 8 albums are worth a go, so that's quite a lot. Now, he's adamant about this. So, Paul, thank you for this. He's adamant. Leo Sayer, Silverbird, which was, I think, the first Leo Sayer album before the record company and the producers got their hooks in him and made them what they wanted him to be. I'm told it's a weird, interesting album. So next time we get Silverbird by Leo Sayer, I'm going to give it a listen. And listeners, does anybody else agree? Because I'm curious to hear if this is like a lost classic. Well, because you know what else is a good one? Is Rock On by David Essex. Maybe this is another Rock On situation. And he also adds Rick Wakeman, 6 Wives of Henry VIII. Of Henry the VII? 8th? That Henry bloke. 8th, right? And he adds the caveat, yes, I know, but it is really good. Is it?
I had that in the shop once. The cover terrified me.
Yeah, it's can't be good, can it? That's not a good album. Listeners, am I wrong? Is that a good album? And Paul Curd writes to say, I think greatest hits and best ofs are generally a really good thing to have in the 5 quid bin. It's the spirit of try before you commit to a larger expense. He says, Tim, in the past, I have purchased compilations by Big Country, yeah, and Steely Dan, yeah, maybe, in your good establishment. And it's a great way of finding out whether you might like an artist or not. Now, I think this is very true and leads on very smoothly and slickly.
Oh, doesn't it just?
To a letter we've had from listener Roger Bickmore. Roger writes, I was reminded the other day of Alan Partridge, who, not from listening to our show, I was reminded the other day of Alan Partridge, who, when invited to name his favourite Beatles album, chose their greatest hits. If I remember rightly, Paul, he says, I'd have to say the best of the Beatles. A customer came to my stall and asked only for greatest hits records, saying he didn't have enough room for the rest. I don't think this is as peculiar as it might first sound. There are lots of acts where you really don't want to dig deeper than their bangers. Here are some examples, in my opinion, where you require no other vinyl than their greatest hits, saving yourself space and money. Now, Paul, obviously this is going to be contentious. And this is not the values of the We Buy Records podcast, but this is what Roger says. Roxy Music, Street Life, 20 Greatest Hits, double LP, Queen, Greatest Hits 1, Blondie, Best of Blondie, ABBA, Greatest Hits, Elvis, 30 number one hits, Madonna, The Immaculate Collection, Tina Turner, All the Best, Elton John, Greatest Hits, The Who, Meaty, Big and Bouncy, and The Eagles, Greatest Hits, 71, 75. Have you got a problem with any of them? I know it's all beard music. Paul, Madonna, what do you reckon? Is Madonna, The Immaculate Collection, all you really need?
If you want her kind of legacy stuff, probably it is, yeah. If you're not interested in the weird kind of dance period, if you just want classic pop.
Yeah, if you want the classic pop, you're kind of sorted there. He says, of course, there are others where it would be a mistake. Restricting yourself to 20 golden greats from the Beach Boys and missing out on Pet Sounds would be a crime. Likewise, relying on Change's One Bowie instead of investing in Hunky Dory or Aladdin Sane would be a huge mistake. But, he says, with a lot of greatest hits albums under a fiver, they are surely a really great way to build a collection. I think you're totally spot on. It's kind of what the 5 quid classics section was made for. Like, just recently, we have popped into our 5 quid classics section the best of Sam and Dave, the best of OMD, the best of the Eagles, the best of Ultravox.
Ultravox is the one we get quite a lot in, the best of.
And it's cheap. And it's the same music, isn't it? It's just the cover might not be quite as nice as the actual album covers. But yeah, sorted. I say, God bless the best of.
Well, I'm really curious. Listeners, do you have any others that you would add to this list? Because please let us know, because I'm really, really intrigued.
Also, listeners, can you make a spirited defence of any of these being not good enough and that you need everything? I personally think Roxy Music, Street Life, 20 Greatest Hits, great, great best of. I think you need all of For Your Pleasure. And also The Who, Meaty, Big and Bouncy. I think you also need all those weird early John Entwistle bonkers songs if you really want to get the full picture. Roger, thank you so much for your letter. I enjoyed reading that. Thank you. And listeners, if you've got any compilation or 5 quid classic suggestions, please do get in touch. You can email us. We're at webuyrecordspod@gmail.com.
Now, Tim, before we get to the last little bit and the quiz, I came across something while I was researching the quiz, which I think you're going to find slightly mad, and the listeners will probably have a little bit of a laugh at. So there is a CD for sale. It's a single copy. It's called The Ultimate VIP Edition of I'm Not a Hipster, and it includes the following benefits. This is the one copy of the CD that I signed and dedicated to my dad. When you buy this copy for $1 million, I will add a dedication to you at your request. This is my first album. As I record and release my second and further albums and begin to top the Billboard charts, you will be able to say that you got the most important copy of my first album. The one I gave to my father, I need to interject here, and then obviously took back, the man who inspired everything I've done. The dedication page is not photographed on the public listing, but will be provided to seriously interested inquiries. Purchasing this CD acts similar to an NFT.
It guarantees you
future tickets and backstage passes to all the Aaron Petter shows, not including airfare or transportation, and signed copies of all future recordings. Please note, the shipping is listed as local pickup. This is because the CD will be hand-delivered by me to you anywhere in the world, provided your location is safe and secure for me to travel and access. At time of delivery, you will have the option, you ready for this, to go to dinner and or drinks with me and have a meet and greet as my treat. I'm just going to end with this. It says, own a piece of musical history with Aaron Petter's I'm Not a Hipster CD. This album showcases the artist's talent and versatility with a mix of rock and pop genres. Released in 2010 under the label of Aaron Petter, this CD comes in a standard jewel case and was produced by Stacey O'Dell. Anyway, the album contains a variety of tracks that will take you on a musical journey, blah, 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 blah. Now, Tim, you must be thinking, this guy, he must be quite famous.
Well, I'm a huge fan of, what was his name?
Aaron Petter. So I've checked on Discogs. How many people do you think own this album on Discogs?
4.
0. And how many people do you think?
Oh, Aaron.
How many people do you think want this album on Discogs?
Oh, Paul, is it 0?
It is 0. Oh, do you know how much Aaron. It would cost you to buy an unsigned copy?
79p.
Probably some $2, oh. I think.
Oh, Aaron.
I can't work out if this is, he's a bit out there or completely deluded, or this is some kind of art project he's doing.
One of our listeners might buy this now. If we've got any really, really rich listeners, I wouldn't put it past them.
I love that he signed it for his father, who inspired him. Can I have it back?
Can we get him on the show, Paul?
Oh, should we try?
Aaron, if you're listening, can you get your people to talk to our people? Bloody hell. Oh, Aaron. What's it called? I Am Not a Hipster.
Yep.
What a wankerish name. It could be incredible. We could be missing out on one of the albums of our generation, Paul.
It could be. We're going to have to try and find it now.
Yeah, well, for a cool million, it can be yours. Jesus Christ. Now, Paul, it's funny you should mention CD, which is what that format was, because I believe as we hurtle towards the quiz...
Yes.
And the end of the show. I think you've had another CD discovery, haven't you?
So, listener Douglas Baptiste, I can't thank you enough for flagging this, because I think we have mentioned this on the show in the past, that they're going to start doing to CDs, tapes and records what they do with video games, comics, coins, stamps. And I believe, Tim, you're in the comic, it's called slabbing. Is that correct?
It is called slabbing, yeah. So
that's not a sex thing?
It's not a sex thing, Paul. Slabbing is when you seal, you send your item off to a professional grader who, stop laughing at your own sex joke, Paul. You send it off to a professional grader, a self-professed professional grader, who will tell you what condition it's in their professional opinion, print out a little thing which states the condition, and seal your item in plastic. And so for as long as that item remains encased in this plastic, the grade and the detail to say this is a first edition from this year and it is this grade, for as long as it remains sealed in plastic, that grade is sort of approved and official. So I've got the first, you know, the first Spider-Man, and it's an 8.7 out of 10 condition. And there it is. You can't touch it anymore. You can't look at the comic. You can't open the pages. If it's a game, you can't play the game. But what you can say is I've had an expert confirm the condition of this item.
Right. Well, that's now happening with music, Tim. So physical media is now being graded and slabbed.
So, Paul, I knew that it fucking would.
Yes. We mentioned it a couple of times on the show. This is coming. This is coming. This is coming. Now it is here. So, Tim, nice simple quiz this time. Higher or lower, that's all you need to do. This is going to be fairly quick. I've not gone back to Discogs to check everything, only the first one, just so people can get an idea of the completely mental contrast between the slabbed and unslabbed.
Well, just before we do this, since slabbing has become so popular in comics, do you know what they now call unslabbed comics?
Trash?
Well, close enough. They call them raw comics.
Ooh, like raw chicken, lovely.
So just a mental image for you there. Right, here we go. Quiz
right,
time.
Don't get annoyed, Tim. So, Metallica 1 on cassette from 1989. This has been slabbed.
Oh, yeah, I hate it already.
How much do they want for I'm sure it's a very nice one, but it's still a cassette encased in plastic.
100 quid. Let's start the ball rolling at 100 quid.
So let's get the ball rolling at $375. These are all American. Of course, it's American. This is the only one I bothered to check, because otherwise it just gets so time-consuming and ridiculous.
And depressing.
You can buy a beautiful copy of that cassette for $5.
Yep, that sounds about right. That's what it would be. It would be a fiver in the shop.
So the markup between...
Yeah, there's a slight markup.
M&M's 8 Mile on CD, which you could find for 10p in
a charity
shop.
Yeah, isn't this mad?
Right?
It's taking
higher or lower than Metallica?
Yeah, things that aren't worth anything. So lower, actually, that's going to be lower.
It is lower at $250, Tim.
Fucking stupid. Right, okay, I'm getting my notes. Okay, one. Next.
Bjork debut on cassette.
Higher.
Yep, $850.
Yep.
Depeche Mode's Violator on cassette from 1990.
Lower.
No, it's actually on sale with 25% off at $1,124.
Paul, where are you finding these?
eBay.
Really? There are slabbed CDs and cassettes sitting on eBay?
Yep.
Shit. Yep, okay, shit. Next.
Soft Cell, Non-Stop Erotic Cabaret. On cassette.
On cassette. Lower.
Is it higher or lower than one? No, it's higher. It's $1,200.
Oh, fuck off.
These are all from official graders, by the way.
Oh, my God.
Or housed in official graded, you know, cases. Tim, Taylor Swift Big Machine on CD.
Yeah,
higher
lower,
or lower than Soft
lower,
Cell?
Lower, 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 lower.
No.
No, what?
$2,199.
So this has not been touched by Taylor. It's not signed. It's sent it to a bloke.
Yep.
Who says, oh, it's near mint. And puts it in plastic.
Because he's literally gone to Walmart and bought it.
What a fucking joke. Right, next. I am getting cross. On, you said
Tim,
to not, you said to not you, get cross, but do, I'm getting cross.
They, Could you just nip down to Tesco's and buy some CDs, and we could start up with we buy records grading.
No, because they've stopped selling
physical media. Oh no.
Hang on though, fuck, we buy records grading.
Yes, this is we'll have a talk after this.
Right, yeah, great. let's just quickly buzz through it.
Let's get rid of this stupid quiz. Blink 182, Enema of the State.
Oh, God.
On cassette. Is that higher or lower than Taylor Swift?
Lower.
Unfortunately, it's not. It's higher.
Oh, piss off.
$2,500 for Blink 182 on cassette, which has been sealed by a bloke.
So there is an intriguing documentary on YouTube, like a fan-made documentary, which lays out in exhaustive detail why the video game slabbing...
Seen it.
Isn't it amazing?
It's a scam.
It's a fucking con.
Yes.
Yeah. So, listeners, if you have about...
Way ahead of you, because I knew I was doing this.
Nice one, Paul. this guy's good, listeners. Paul, he's good. If you have about an hour to spare, I don't know what you search for, but if you search slabbed video of Mario video game...
Yeah, it's Mario. It's based around the whole
scam.
Scam
or con. It's pretty depressing and eye-opening and... undeniable that it is naughty business.
Yeah, and we don't want it coming into
we don't want it coming here. we don't want it. No. Next.
So Tim, we were with Blink 182. So Pantera, Metal Magic 1983 cassette, is that higher or lower than Blink 182?
Higher.
It is higher. It's $4,000, Tim.
Yep. That's worth every penny. So that was before Pantera were cool, when they were a kind of cheesy hair metal band, mm-hmm. and it has one of the shittest album art album covers ever, and I love that cover. It's got a very happy rocking animal on it. It's amazing.
I should point out, most of these have been graded by either AMG or IGS. These are real companies doing real work.
I want to say work.
Metallica Garage Days on cassette.
An original.
Yeah.
Lower though, lower than Pantera.
It is lower than Pantera at $3,000.
Fucking stupid.
And Nirvana Bleach on cassette.
Higher.
How much higher?
Oh, shit. $6,000.
How much higher?
Not higher than that.
How much higher?
$10,000 for that, sir.
How much? How much? What did you say? 10?
Yeah.
How much higher?
So the clinically insane person selling it wants $15,000.
How much higher?
Come on. Oh, okay.
$25,000. It's a first print.
I still got the point.
And this has been graded by one of these companies. This is not... What the fuck?
Oh, man.
Who's paying $25,000 for a fucking tape?
But the short answer surely is nobody is paying that.
Nobody?
Yeah.
But this could be a glimpse into the future of collecting music, Tim. And I don't like it.
I suspect it is. The funny thing is, when I first saw slabbed comics, I was naturally angry and disgusted. I mean, comics are more delicate than records. Comics are more susceptible to tearing the cover, you know, creasing and stuff than a CD or a record. It's relatively easy to look after them compared to a 60-year-old comic. But you know what's happened? Over the years and years and years now that I've seen slab comics as a thing, Paul, they've worn me down.
Mm-hmm.
I'm now kind of accepting that, okay, so you've got comics as a thing to enjoy and to read, and then comics as a thing to collect, like $1,000 bottles of wine that you're not going to drink, or coin collections that you put in the cupboard.
Yep.
I have slowly, grudgingly accepted that there are two different types of collectors. So I suppose it's not going to be that much of a leap to accept that there are two different types of collectors for audio as well. And it sucks, but I don't think we can do anything about it.
No, no. The train has left the station, unfortunately.
What a downbeat ending for the pod.
Join us next time for more adventures in vinyl.
We are going to end.
By records. No, should we end on a positive note, Tim?
Yeah.
If anyone's got £1 million, we definitely need to get that bloke's dad's CD.
Before he blows up.
Yes. I wonder when his second album's coming out, because 2010 was quite a while ago. I just realised that was 14 years.
Oh, has he not had a second album yet?
Yeah, it's 14 years. No. Right, join us next time for more Adventures in Vinyl on We
Buy
Records.